Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicle Companies and Markets Show. I am John Heumann, editor of the Investors Chronicle, joined today by Ian Smith, Companies Editor. How are you doing, Ian?
Not too bad, John. How are you?
Wonderful. Exciting week.
It's been a very exciting week.
Yeah. How are you doing, Bradley? News editor Bradley Gerrard.
Thank you. Yeah, not too bad.
Yeah, you enjoyed the excitement of this week?
Yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? Because from a market perspective, like the initial sort of, oh gosh, this is going to happen, caused a bit of shock. But then compared to the fallout after Brexit, like when Brexit vote happened, some of the UK shares absolutely plummeted. We didn't see that in the Western shares after the Trump election.
So obviously this we are talking about is, just to be clear, as if you didn't know already,
in case you've been living in a cave for the past week,
is the election of Donald Trump as the president of the United States of America, which is something that really nobody, I think nobody's the wrong word, not many people, certainly.
Not many pollsters.
Not many pollsters expected.
I think his chances of winning were given as the same as rolling two sixes on two die. So yeah, possible, but very outside chance. But as we should have learned from the Brexit vote, the polls aren't always the best indicator, or and turnout is very important. But yeah, how late did you stay up, John?
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock. So yeah, 3 o'clock. It became clear by 1 o'clock that something unusual was going on. Listen, I would not have stayed up till even 1 o'clock had I thought that the result was a foregone conclusion, because I like sleeping. But yeah, I kind of sensed, as you may have got the impression from in my editorial last week, that something unusual might happen. It had a whiff of Brexit about it. No one predicted the outcome of the EU referendum the day before. I must admit, and on that occasion, I went to bed because I thought it was done.
But it does definitely play into this populist trend that you've talked about and that we've covered in the magazine before. So I suppose some people had said there'll be reasons why it will be close. There are battleground states where, if he does manage to attract some of the kind of working class and rural white vote, that he has a chance. Obviously, a lot of it turned on Florida. So I stayed up and just about until Florida looked like it was going the wrong way.
That still hadn't been called at 3 o'clock in the morning.
It hadn't, but interestingly, they were going kind of sector by sector, weren't they, through Florida. And the big hope was that in the South, the Democrat would get a big vote, which, yeah, didn't look like it was going to be happening.
But yeah, you didn't really get the feel for that at that level from the BBC so much. I mean, I was watching the BBC. It was an unusual experience and also quite entertaining.
I mean, going back to what Bradley was saying, I didn't really understand why everyone was trailing that there would be this big market fall if Donald Trump became president. I have to say, running up to it, I understand the reasons why politically people think he might be bad, but the idea that the markets would straight away price in a Donald Trump presidency as being, a reason why the big corporates are going to have major problems straight away. I think we should have maybe learned that lesson from the Brexit vote. Obviously, there are big issues around what he'll do when it comes to trade policy that can have a massive impact. But in terms of the things that he had pledged before, things like the biggest tax cut since Ronald Reagan, the idea that that would be bad for US business, I suppose I didn't get the causal link. It seemed to be people that were saying it would be a major negative effect on the markets, just didn't want it to happen, viewed him as a bad thing for the world, and thought, well, the equity markets will price in a worse world.
Yeah, I know. I completely agree. And again, as I mentioned in my editorial, I didn't think a Trump victory would be as scary for the markets as people previously suggested. I mean, at 1 o'clock in the morning, you did start to see the gold price shifting up quite sharply. Those gains have been largely eradicated now. Markets have bounced back quite strongly.
Yeah, we had, I think it was sort of gold, yen, usual sort of safe havens, government bonds were sort of rallying as the sort of apparent results was sort of coming through. But yeah, in sort of throughout the trading day of Wednesday in the UK, things sort of, any sort of gains in those safe havens were largely pared back, and any falls in things like emerging market equities or emerging market currencies either all came back or retrenched them or rose again to a degree. I mean, the Mexican peso I think is still down, but not the level that it was initially. I guess sort of now the question is, how much leeway will he have? Obviously the Republicans have control of both parts of the US legislature, but I was just having a look through. Obviously, we got sent an awful, awful lot of comments from fund managers, that sort of thing. I was just going through a few of them before the podcast of some people that I think sort of usually sort of speak some sense. And a few people. There's like James Foster from Artemis, Michael Hassenstab from Franklin Templeton. They both kind of say, you know, he's not necessarily going to have complete leeway to do what he wants. And actually, while he talks a lot about protectionism, which could be bad for the global economy, the US is incredibly reliant on trade, and it's incredibly reliant on immigration too. And so there could be, if you're an investor in US equities and there is a bit of protectionism and immigration is cut down, that could be good for for wages. You could get inflation there, could be good, rates rising. But obviously it could have an impact on global economies. If you're a global equity investor, there could sort of be pressures there potentially. But then in the UK market, you know, we did a piece in the news section looking at which UK stocks moved immediately. Some of the pharma stocks, it could be good for them, because had Hillary won, she was threatening to, you know, curtail pricing or enact some sort of pricing control to a degree. That won't happen now, she's not elected. So for pharma in the UK, which obviously operate quite widely in the US, that could be good. If Donald Trump is going to build all these roads and bridges in the US, then any UK-based infrastructure plays that have presence in the US could be good for them.
Who might that be?
CRH was one we highlighted in the piece, and their shares were rallying well above the market yesterday.
And Ashtead as well.
And Ashtead.
I thought in the end, by the end of the day in the UK, which I suppose markets had a little bit more time to digest, it was actually quite a sensible reaction that the stocks that were moving were ones where, yeah, there were demonstrable reasons why, in terms of, you know, we talk too much, I think, about markets pricing in things. But in that case, yeah, had Hillary Clinton won, she'd been quite specific about things that she would do that would have hurt these companies. The fact she didn't win, those companies' share price rose in the expectation that earnings won't be curtailed in future. And then, you know, on the construction side, the only policy, and I think it was actually quite a smart politically speech that Donald Trump gave in his acceptance speech, the only policy that he raised was infrastructure spending, which was a policy that both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump agreed on. So that was kind of a point of consensus, and it was the only thing he raised, and those companies that were exposed to that market in the UK benefited.
US infrastructure has been a bugbear in the US for many, many years.
It has to be
crumbling addressed. Bridges and crumbling roads. I mean, it was going to happen. That was going to happen regardless. So you kind of wonder at the market sometimes, like, that was going to happen anyway, regardless if you won. So why did the price rise after the election?
Yeah, well,
the market baffles me sometimes. Market baffles me often.
I suppose you get a sense of, you know, politicians make a wide range of pledges, and if he chose to highlight that one as something he would do as a consensus policy that everyone agrees with, perhaps there's an idea of picking the things of the politicians say on the election trail that they are actually going to put into place. But maybe I'm being generous.
Yeah, it was good for oil and gas and the energy sector as well.
Well, yeah, I don't think he's known as a green advocate. So I think there's certainly a perception that the... In the words of one of the commentators, I sort of read something from, the regulatory noose on things such as energy is probably likely to be loosened.
So fracking everywhere then?
Maybe. Who knows?
I think that's the more interesting thing to look at. Will he keep to some of the agreements that were made, the Iran deal being an important one, the Paris Agreement being another massively important one? Will he keep to those? That's where he can have a kind of a tangible effect over his first term, just purely using his executive power.
But he can't. Renege on those deals immediately, can he? And I read it would take 3 years to pull out of the Paris COP22 deal.
I suppose, but will he put into place the things they need to do in order to reduce their dependence on carbon-intensive energy? So, you know, will he take the practical steps? It'll be pretty obvious to see whether he's doing that or whether he's not doing that. In terms of the Iran deal, that's going to be interesting because, as Bradley said, the Republicans having control of the House and the Senate, and the vast amount of opposition to those deals. And actually, I think it's interesting, in the early running for some of the deals done between companies in Iran and companies from the outside, you haven't seen so much from the US companies. It's been the French companies, some of the German companies that have done the early running, and you wonder whether some of those US companies have been aware of the fact that there could be a Donald Trump presidency and that maybe striking a big strategic deal with Iran is not very wise given the political uncertainty.
Yeah, another potential investment sort of thing as well, as obviously if Trump does enact on these sort of effectively, I suppose, expansionary policies, some comments that I've read suggest that he, you know, might well put an end to quantitative easing.
That's not his choice.
Well, it is if he elects the chair of the Federal Reserve. effectively.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
well, he can have an influence. So it was interesting to see how the banks responded on the day, because they were initially down. And I think when he talked about infrastructure spending, people thought, okay, so fiscal policy coming back to the fore. And given the past remarks he's made, and the this question of whether he will put pressure on the Fed, but then the banks came back more positively, as it seemed to be. You know, we weren't going to hell in a handcart, but also people may be questioning, the influence that he could actually exert on the Federal Reserve.
And if he does spend more, there's, James Foster at Artemis, he's actually gone, he's a bond manager, and he's gone short on government bonds, because he thinks that, along with other people, that sort of US government debt is in a bubble, and especially now Trump's president, there's a high chance that yields on US government bonds could rise quite sharply.
Yeah, but I don't think that can entirely be attributed to a Trump victory. I think those thoughts were building momentum beforehand anyway.
They were coming anyway, but I think he sort of is a catalyst for that to keep going and possibly go faster.
See, I've also heard from elsewhere, from other sources, that some people think that the uncertainty that a Trump election, a Trump victory creates, could actually postpone the interest rises we were expecting in December.
That's what I was trying to explain. I think that's why the banks, partially why they went down initially, because the idea that there would be some economic problems as a result of a Trump presidency had led people to think, well, the Federal Reserve will have to push back its interest, further interest rate rises. And therefore that kind of drag on banks' profitability from lower interest rates would carry on for even longer. But, over the day, as the government bond markets kind of recovered, it seemed perhaps less likely that, there would be that kind of change to the course. Or at least people have just gone back to neutral on that question, and we're all just debating it now.
All seems a bit speculative, really.
Yeah, I think exactly right. Yes. I think the hard thing is to say, across the board, there should be some impact in equities. I think where we saw the moves were specific sectors that had priced in particular political risks, and those risks either evaporated or were kind of compounded.
All right, blimey, this is all very serious and very gloomy. This is not how I like to run these things. Cheer up, everyone. Right, what else we got, Bradley, in the news section? Banks. Good news from banks, wasn't it?
They
made it into our good week, bad week, good slot, HSBC. Yes. Is that because it wasn't really a good week and that's the best we could find?
they had quite a strong share price movement upwards, because basically with the emerging markets focused banks, their restructure and recovery is moving ahead quite nicely. So their capital levels are higher, so people are more confident about the dividend. So the market in HSBC's case had been pricing its yield quite high, suggesting they thought the dividend would have to be cut. And that's actually come back a bit now because the market is slightly more confident that it will be able to pay. And Standard Chartered, its impairments are down. We've seen emerging markets improving, so that kind of feeds into the sentiment for those banks. So and they'd also kind of thrown the kitchen sink out, and we're seeing some of the benefits of the the comparisons year on year. So it's definitely an improving situation for those banks, but there still are concerns about HSBC's dividend. I think there's an analyst here from Shore Capital, Gary Greenwood, who's still at the moment, although I think he might be reviewing it, forecasting a dividend cut in 2017. So they're not out of the woods yet.
Okay, Standard Chartered, which has had a horrible time as well, we talk about in this piece. Things are looking a little bit better there.
Yeah, well, as Ian said, the losses have fallen, which is the impairment losses have fallen, which is good. Obviously they're very emerging markets exposed, which more recently has been a better trade than it happened at the start of the year. But I suppose coming back ever so briefly to Mr. Trump, obviously if some of his policies do become, or the US economy becomes more protectionist, that could have an impact on some emerging market economies, and thus could affect Standard Chartered. There's a few ifs and buts there, but the emerging markets trade has been better more recently, but obviously things changing all the time, especially with the new US president.
Well, it's what we're looking at on the cover of next week's magazine. In the cover feature, Emma Powell is looking at that and asking whether the recovery we've seen over the last couple of years, since the big sell-off in 2012-13, whether actually now some of these political moves that we're seeing will actually put a put a bump in the road for some of the emerging market recovery we've seen.
And we're back to interest rates again.
And we are back to interest rates, yeah. Which is incidentally the cover feature this week, that's written by Philip Ryland, a very long cover feature looking in depth at the history and future of central bank interest rate policies, and asking whether the party's over. But I mean, again, it's a big question. I mean, you know, it is a huge dilemma for central banks. What to do next with interest rates? I know they'd love to put them up. I think everyone would love them to put interest rates up, but it's just not that simple anymore.
Well, also, like you say, coming back to the UK and property, I mean, obviously, if you put those interest rates up, then an economy which is so built on, you know, debt linked to housing, it's potentially quite dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I think a lot of people are now suggesting that perhaps we should have done this earlier. Perhaps the central banks should have done this earlier. Painful as it may have been at the time, to at least give us some wiggle room now, and now we're kind of stuck at the bottom and there's not really anywhere to move either up or down, and it's a slightly terrifying situation, really. which suggests that there may be some more inventive central bank manoeuvrings on the way, which Philip also talks about, but I'll leave you to read that because we haven't got 10 hours to actually discuss that. Right, comparison sites, which we talked about briefly last week, thanks to your advice for me to switch my gas supplier. Although British Gas still have 500 quid of my money, which I'm surprised they haven't returned to me yet. Anyway, comparison shopping. We've got a new one coming to market as a demerger from Esure.
So yeah, so GoCompare has demerged from Esure. And what our tech and media reporter Theron has done is had a look at that against the already listed moneysupermarket.com. Money Supermarket is much bigger. So Theron just kind of looks at the potential benefits of investing in one versus the other, such as like growth trajectories, that type of thing. And obviously for investors interested in the sector, there's even said to be later in the year, rival comparethemarket.com's parent company BGL Group is looking on track to do an IPO early next year. So it's a sort of burgeoning subsector, I suppose, of insurance that is potentially quite interesting. It's quite a robust sector, as we sort of talked about last week, I believe. And, you know, with people like yourself, John, now using such sites or similar sites to switch their utility bills.
I do feel slightly dirty using a comparison site.
Why?
Because I just, it's sort of ridiculous.
Yeah, but it was easy and it saved you lots of money.
I know, but the whole thing is sort of ridiculous. I mean, you know, it's like, why should there have to be a middleman to make sure I get a better price from a supplier that I've been loyal to for years?
Did you ever try switching before they existed?
I kind of have, but my point is the whole thing is ridiculous. But we need a multi-company subsector on the stock market to allow you to be charged a reasonable amount by a supplier that you've been loyal to for years.
Yeah, but
the world's gone mad!
But that's just the business model of insurance companies, which is like the business model of any subscription product, right? Isn't it? That each year you might try and put the price of the subscription up. Yes, you'll model how many of those customers you'll lose and you'll kind of weigh that up against how much you can get in extra premium revenue.
But it kind of suggests that though the thing that the insurance companies are selling is so horribly generic and rubbish that you know, there is actually, it's just one. Why do we even need multiple suppliers? Why not just have one giant insurance supplier that charges insurance to everyone at a reasonable price? This is nonsense.
But this is because you have a legally mandated insurance. You have to insure your car if you have a car. So you create a product that no one values the difference between either of any of the different providers.
So
there's no benefit really in kind of providing huge amounts of extras because people aren't that interested. Yeah, exactly right. So you have to, and you sometimes have to increase your premiums because you've had higher claims. So this is like a perfect market where you need a middleman.
Although, to your point, I suppose one interesting thing that could, you know, with all these people coming to market, what you are seeing a little bit more of is some sites, and I'm seeing it in my sector as well, where hotels are concerned, this boast now that you can only get the best rates on that provider's website. So people like Hilton, their advertising campaign is all about how the best rates are on their site. They're trying to cut out the middleman. Insurance, I think Direct Line, their adverts say the same thing. They're not on these comparison sites. So
Direct
they
Line? They've never had the best rates.
Well, exactly right. But they do have a brand that is on the comparison website. So it's really interesting. Strategically, they have a couple of different options. But funnily enough, just to back up your point, some of these price comparison websites are now being allowed by regulators to have preferential pricing on their site that you can't get on other sites. So what the regulator wants you to do, and this will really wind you up, they want you to go to a couple of different price comparison websites. So to compare the market, you're going to have to compare different price comparison websites?
Mate, we've just invented a new business on this podcast, which I'm going to list in 2 years' time. It's compare the market.
Well, that's what I called my column earlier this year, funnily enough.
It's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
But yeah, it is ridiculous.
No, it might be ridiculous, but it is providing obviously a service that people feel that they need, and it makes it very easy to quickly look at a different price for a product. And as Ian was saying, insurance really is kind of a commoditized thing now.
Companies are, to kind of follow up on what you were saying before, it's an insurance subsector. Well, in some ways, it's a media subsector because they are platforms.
Yeah,
you know, like in many other areas, they aren't insurance companies, they're platforms, and they offer lots of different products. Credit card comparison, energy is an emerging area. Money Supermarket is much more widely spread than GoCompare, which is one of the things we go into in this piece. But yeah, we are more and more using platforms. With the reforms to banking, there'll be more comparison of bank accounts is going to be happening. So you'll see more platforms there. John, you're going to have to get used to this.
I suppose it's better than having to go to an insurance broker.
Exactly right. And people are kind of don't want it's interesting. I was reading this piece earlier about how when it comes to managing their own finances, a lot of the millennial generation don't want to go via an IFA. They don't like paying a commission to someone just to decide where to put their money. But we are accepting kind of intermediaries when it comes to these other areas, as long as it's through a kind of technology platform.
That's free.
You know, although they are getting, you know, a benefit from it. So that obviously must reflect in the premiums.
So talking about online, yeah, wonderful, great, you know, online comparison, all very brilliant, but then an online bank this week's had all sorts of problems. Tesco.
Yeah,
Tesco. Online's not so great after all.
Well, online is the way of things. I guess protecting online is the difficulty, because the more and more of our lives that are put online obviously creates a greater target with which to, you know, for cyber attackers to hit, I suppose. And Tesco Bank, I think problems started happening over the weekend, and they ended up this week sort of suspending around 20,000 accounts, as there were some instances of money being taken from people's accounts. And this,
could still get money out, cash out. They suspended, I think, the online transactions.
Yeah, but it's just it's one of a sort of relatively recent sort of litany of quite high profile cyber attacks on major companies. I mean, in the UK we had TalkTalk the back end of last year, we had Sage in the middle of this year.
Did we?
Around
Didn't
August
know about that. Yeah, missed that one.
And also you've had more recent ones, LinkedIn and Yahoo, in the not too distant past either. Mark Robinson's written a good piece on this, and I guess if I was to sort of pick out a line in it, it's the amount that's being spent on defending, how much businesses are spending on defending themselves. So in 2004, the global cybersecurity market was valued at $3.5 billion. By 2015, that figure had grown to $78 billion. And estimates for next year range from $120 to $175 billion.
That's an extraordinary amount of money.
Yeah, it is. There are ways which Mark highlights in which to kind of access that via listed entities on the UK market. But I guess really what maybe perhaps a broader trend for investors to consider is that companies in some way or another are likely to have to spend more on this. Whether they hire a team internally to do it, they hire expertise from outside, it's a cost that looks likely to only keep rising, because, as I said at the start, more and more of our lives are online, and data is so valuable.
Yeah, so stop putting your life online. Buy a print product. Oh, the Investor's Chronicle. Only pay in cash. Have some gold under your bed.
And fill up the bunker. it's a problem that's not going to go away. And it's very hard for companies to defend themselves. They can do things to mitigate the chances of an attack, but I don't think any online business could say that it is 100% protected.
It might be a reason why some of these new kind of fintech companies or some of the challenger banks are trying to kind of break into the current account space. It might be that they might struggle if people think, okay, well, where's the most secure place to keep my money, which is the principal thing?
Under the bed in gold. Yeah.
What's the second secret? Yeah. How secure is your house? But you know,
it's a fortress, mate.
It's a fortress in the safe. So it might mean that, you know, if certain companies are seen as, you know, more robust than others, so it's a bank. Well, this is a bank that's a subsidiary of a supermarket. You know, in terms of, they did a very good job, I think, in this case of averting a crisis of confidence by saying, look, you can keep getting money out, trying to prevent a bank run. But yeah, you kind of wonder whether it might be, you know, a reason to keep your money with one of the larger pure banks if you think they have a better operation. And we've seen actually, on the flip side, quite a lot of problems at some of the major banks in terms of, you know, systems going down. So, yeah, I don't know. It'll be a while before we start to see which companies have a better handle on this.
Technology, mate. Can't rely on it. My bank's had its fair share of problems. You know, it's just one of those things. Connected world, this is the price you pay. But then, is it worth taking that risk rather than having to go and queue up in a bank for half an hour every lunchtime to get out some money? So, I mean, you know.
A lot of people think that it probably is.
I think it probably is in the long run, especially as the banks have to pay out if they lose your money.
Well, exactly. Yeah,
that's a good point.
Okay, my goodness. Well, my God, we've whittled on for ages. We've touched about a tenth of the magazine. Haven't really looked at any of the results because we had some quite interesting results this week. Mark Spencer.
Yep, we had.
Pretty shocking.
Yeah, pretty bad in the same way that we've known that it has been bad, but it's got its new CEO. But yeah, it's now he has brought in, yeah, some pretty classic new CEO measures. He's shut the defined benefit pension scheme to future accrual. He's cut
should have done that years ago.
Well, I think that obviously it was already close to new members. So, I mean, they've made one stage, but that's he's also cut the massive amount of headcount from the head office. They are cutting a lot of stores. Their strategy is changing. They're not trying to sell kind of directly clothes online overseas anymore, rather kind of going through the franchise business, which is still profitable. So actually there's quite an interesting comparison in the results between M&S, which is trying to refocus even more on food and not try and be a kind of global retailer, and Primark, which is owned by Associated British Foods, that Bradley reported on, in terms of they are still going for online overseas expansion when it comes to clothes.
Yeah, I mean, they've opened stores in the US, I think Italy as well, and I mean, the US is a incredibly competitive market. I think they've only got about 5 stores there at the moment. About that, they're planning to open a few more.
The graveyard of British retailers.
Well, yeah, that's kind of. I mean, we have AB Foods, which is the owner of Primark, on a sale, and it's been a very good call actually. I think it actually topped the FTSE on the day of the results. There were some turnaround stories within the results, within certain segments of it, particularly the sugar business. But one of the reasons we did put it on a sell at the start back in December last year was because of fears about margins at Primark, and that is transpiring. The fact that the company buys pretty much all its merchandise in dollars and sells it almost exclusively in pounds and euros has had an effect on margins. So that's going to continue, they said, into next year. While some of the pressure has been mitigated by the buying teams, they can't keep fully mitigating it, especially if the difference in rate between the dollar and the pound persists, which it looks likely to.
Yeah, and you've got worries about the sugar business. Got some quota worries there.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just such an unknown. I mean, the sugar price has been coming back, and it was partly the fact that they did stymie losses in the sugar business, which helped the share price rise. So there was a bit of a turnaround in that division, largely, I will say, through cost cutting, and also the fact that they restated last year's sugar profits down quite a lot due to an accounting standard linked to crops. So the profits in the sugar business grew by about £1 million from memory, but that was because they were restated down £10 million last year. So,
I've never been in Primark. Actually, no, I have been in a Primark once. It's horrible.
Yeah, I have to say, I hate it. I don't find it a pleasurable experience at
my
all.
My kids dragged me in there looking for bags, and they didn't like it much either, which I thought was interesting. Mm. There you go. Sainsbury's, which was a tip of the year, not exactly had a runaway year, not been the best tip of the year we've ever had.
Well, yeah, it's come back a bit. Obviously, there's lots of problems that we've discussed facing the grocers this period of the half year. The underlying sales, excluding fuel but including VAT, fell, which wasn't good, as a result of pricing pressure. And there was also some kind of shrinking margins as well. That wasn't great. But what is good is that Argos is continuing to do well. Argos that they acquired. And obviously the synergies seem to be on track there. So this is definitely a business that's very much transforming.
Who would have thought Argos would be the saviour of Sainsbury's?
I just think and I might be wrong on this, but I still think that's a kind of smart response to the kind of changes that we're seeing in retail in terms of the click and collect. They're trying to turn themselves more into a kind of John Lewis, where you can kind of sell everything through a pretty smart infrastructure and have loyal customers. I mean, it's obviously a good approach in some respects, but you've got the spectre of Amazon and the pure online retailers that are just kind of hanging over the shoulder and, yeah, scaring everyone.
Yeah, you've got the Spectre of John Lewis as well, which is cropping up in lots of city centres all around the country. We've got a new one near us, Christmas advert out today. That'll be, cause lots of excitement. I think it's a dog jumping on a trampoline.
Wow.
You haven't seen it already.
that's all you need to know.
I'm going
to
go straight upstairs onto YouTube now.
lots of results this week. I mean, we won't go through the wall now, but we've had Imperial Tobacco, Imperial Brands, it's now known.
Yep.
It's an interesting story there. Punch Taverns, pubs, which actually made some money this year.
They did.
It's a bloody miracle.
Yeah. The recovery to a degree kind of continues. I won't go into it now, but effectively they're still selling down a lot of pubs, but their new operating model seems to be working. Things are sort of stabilising. Debt is coming down, but it's still at 6.6 times net debt to cash profit. So it's not exactly debt-free, but going in the right
bit more
direction.
Manageable than it was in the past.
Yeah.
Sophos in the cybersecurity space, which we've kind of mentioned briefly, is mentioned in Mark Robinson's cybersecurity article. Ryanair, which is bouncing back.
Ryanair's doing pretty well, actually, yeah. I guess the biggest sort of line from that very quickly is their sort of pivot away from the UK. They did kind of announce a bit earlier than these results, but it's interesting to see how they've responded to the UK's vote, the referendum vote.
Again, I'm sceptical. I mean, if you're going to pivot, you know, it's not something you can say, you know, it's only been 3 months since the Brexit vote.
True, but their planned second half growth was going to be 12% expansion in the UK. They're now only going to do 5%. So they obviously clearly perceive something's going to change in demand from the UK.
But there are capacity concerns over the whole airline industry anyway, so
true.
You may suspect that that's had some moderating effects on their planning.
Yes, it could be a handsome excuse, I admit that.
Yeah, always looking for excuses. Not Ryanair, me. I'm always looking for other people's excuses. And I will always offer some of my own if they're required. Right, where else have we got the magazines? Algie Hall's looking at Momentum this week. Not been a great period for Momentum, unsurprising, given the general upheaval on the stock markets and the uncertainty we've faced this summer. And he's identified his latest Momentum picks. We have a sector focus on pharmaceuticals, very timely, very good timing, given the US election results. And we have John Barron this week as well. John Barron, our investment trust columnist, updating on his thoughts. John Barron presented at a recent diversification seminar, where he is always a bit of a rock star amongst the IC readers. As I said, Philip Ryland's written the cover feature on interest rates. We have a piece from James Norrington updating the high yield system, which as a value system isn't doing as well. We're going to be talking about some of the theory behind that in a future issue. It's quite interesting, some of the our reasoning as to why that's underperformed and why perhaps we look at things differently today as we did in the 1950s when the high yield system was actually set up. Lots in the personal finance and funds section. As I said, lots of results, lots of comment this week, and lots on the US election, unsurprisingly. And I'm sure we're going to have more in the weeks ahead. I think this is a story that's going to be playing out pretty much for the rest of the year and beyond. Thank you very much, Ian. Thank you, Bradley. And thank you all for listening. Pick up the magazine in all good newsagents. Is the party over? Let's hope in some respects not, but in other respects, yes. Or head on to the website and subscribe. Thank you very much, and see you soon.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.